UK Wine Show, show number 88. Tim Howe from Majestic on staff training. In this week's show...
Because we're building small teams of like-minded people who are going to generate a passion about wine and share that with their colleagues, we find that graduates really enjoy working for us.
And in the news this week, Californian champagne destroyed, Italian wine with no name, and why we prefer expensive wine.
G'day. Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 88 for the 25th January 2008. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we finish our look at wine education and wine as a career. We're going to be talking with CEO Tim Howe of Majestic, UK's top wine shop retail chain. We talked to Tim about the journey of a typical employee and how Majestic helps train their staff and prepare them for a life in the wine trade. Talking to Tim, it was a good chance to get behind the typical sort of CEO administrator type. He talked about the way his company's run and some of the sort of things they look for in people and their staff. So it was a really good opportunity. I think I learned a lot from the show, so I hope you enjoy it as well. But before we get into that, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. A shipment of more than 3,000 bottles of André's sparkling wine made in California by Gallo has been seized and destroyed by Belgian customs authorities because the labels include the word champagne. The wines are legal to be sold in the US, but not in the European Union, where the law prohibits the use of champagne on any wine produced outside France's Champagne region. The Office of Champagne in the United States said that any US product that misuses the champagne name and seeks to enter an export market that protects consumers from misleading labels is considered counterfeit. Gallo said they do not sell product labeled Californian champagne in the EU, and the owner of the produce was in fact a third party based in the States who sells product to cruise ships. They did, however, agree to its destruction, and a video of the wine being destroyed has been released by the CIVC. According to them, patrols in Europe have seized and destroyed over 14,000 bottles bearing the word champagne in the last 4 years. Next up, Italian producers in Friuli Venezia Giulia in northern Italy are ready to bottle the 2007 vintage but have no name to put on the label. It used to be called Tokaj, but when Hungary became part of the EU, it was agreed that the country would have sole use to the name and winemakers in Italy and Alsace would relinquish the name. The regional government in Italy passed a law allowing it to be marketed under its old name, but Italians were given until March 2007 to find another name for use in export markets. Most agreed the wine should be called Frullano. However, a band of producers from Trieste took legal action to block the use of the name and twice have won their case. If no name is found soon, it's a possibility that about 70,000 hectolitres of DOC wine will become just Vin de Pays or Vino di Tavola. But hopefully it won't come to that as we await a decision from the European courts. And finally this week, drinkers think that more expensive wine tastes better, no matter its quality, according to a recent study. Researchers at the California Institute of Technology said that if people believe a wine costs more, they somehow convince their brain that it's more enjoyable. The study involved scanning the brains of 20 people while they sampled what they thought were 5 different Cabernet Sauvignons. Actually, there were only 3 different wines. 2 were sampled twice, once identified at a high price and once at a low price. The results showed that the same wine administered at a high price versus a low price does not only increase the reported pleasantness, but also the way the pleasantness of the flavour signal is evaluated in the brain. Basically, the increase in the pleasure was real, despite the wines being identical. The higher price creates an expectation about how good the wine should be, and that expectation influences the brain during the consumption experience. So, as long as you know it's an expensive bottle, it will always taste better than a wine costing just a fiver, especially if someone else is paying. Don't forget you can get more detail on these stories at 3050.co.uk. Just click on Podcast and then News. That's it from me. Back over to you, Chris.
Cheers, Jane. I'm not surprised about price influencing the way we perceive wine. It's why we're happy to pay 15 quid for a £4 bottle of wine at a restaurant. I really get quite excited when people get to try wines around the £10. I think that's a fantastic price point to drink wines. You get really interesting flavours developing in the wine. So next time you go spend 15 quid for a bottle of wine at a restaurant, why not save it, spend it at the supermarket or Majestics or wherever you like, and see what sort of wine you get. You'll get a fantastic drop. The EU story I was a bit surprised about, that the EU could destroy the fizz. After all, it was destined for cruise ships, and these normally work in international waters outside the reach of the EU. It initially sounded to me like the EU had grabbed a load of fizz in transit. But according to Sandra, the lady who writes our news, the wine wasn't in bond in Belgium, i.e. it had been checked into the Belgium duty system, so it had been landed in Belgium officially. So, which case, the EU had fair game to get to the wine. But it does raise an interesting point about correct labelling of wine. For a while, I thought it was just the EU getting a bit uppity. I'm from New Zealand, so we used to call some wines hock, and eventually we sort of changed that and dropped that as a method of labelling wines. And nowadays, I'm pretty much on line with the EU. There's brands, it doesn't matter if it's wine or meats or any sort of product, if you've got a strong brand, you need to protect that brand. And I'm a bit surprised that the US, who do a huge job protecting their brands and their intellectual property all around the world, don't pass that back to their own country and protect countries like EU's brands. Things like champagne should be protected in the US, and they're not. So for the listeners in the US, have a chat to your congressman and get the law changed. The story does link quite nicely, though, with the next item about Italian region Tokaji. Obviously, the Italians wanted to continue making wine under the Tokaji. This is a wine region in northern Italy. But Hungary got the name, which I'm quite fine with. After all, Hungary do have a town called Tokaji, which the name of the wine was named after, whereas Italy doesn't have that. Although in the news it indicated that Frulliano was not going to be used at all, I've been at two trade tastings this week, and I tasted Frulliano wines, labelled Frulliano wines. So some people are using the name for sure. According to one winemaker, the objections were really from one other winemaker. All I can say to him is, stop being a grumpy old git. Deal with a name change and get on with it. The name's designed to protect you. And you can't expect people like the Americans to honour EU brands if you can't even agree amongst yourselves what they are. Just on that, as I said, I attended two big tastings, the Liberty tasting and the Bibendum tasting. These were trade tastings and they weren't open to the public, which is a bit of a shame, but I got some great podcasts out of it. I did a couple with Ernst Lucen, the infamous German producer and winemaker, and Decanter's Man of the Year 2005. And I got some interesting stuff out of Mariana from Catina Zapata, one of my favourite Argentinian producers. Something I learned at the tasting, though, was my palate was a bit rusty. I haven't been to a really serious tasting in about 6 months, and as a result, I was struggling with some of the aroma profiles. I don't think my cold helped, and I've still got it in my nose a wee bit, if you guys can hear that. But I was quite disappointed with my performance at the tasting. So when I got home, I cracked open my bottle of Nez Divans. Now, this is going to sound like a ad break for Nez Divan, but it's not. It's not sponsored anyway. I just like the products. And you can sit down, smell them, and get those smells, those really important smells. And if you can do 54 smells off the top of your head, which are the common wine ones, you're doing pretty good at a tasting. So I sat down and started tasting them. And I did this a while ago with my little girl when I was studying for my diploma exam. And we got really, really good at smelling different things. And what surprised me is, we sat down again now, and it's been quite a while since we did it. She was really good. She was as good as I was at the different smells. And boy, was she excited when she did that as well. So start them young, train them up how to use their nose. It's a great sense. But also train yourself, and do use something like Nez Divan, particularly if you're going to be studying for one of the WSET diplomas or advanced courses or something like that. Really, really helpful. Get your employer to get one and have them in the office or something. But it's a really good thing. I rate them if you really want to be able to precisely pick out the flavours in the wines. So that's an ad break for Nez Divan, so it's not sponsored or anything. But I just thought I'd mention that because I was having real problems at that tasting. So I'm just in the process of sharpening my nose up now. Take about a week. This week's poll, though, is how confident are you when it comes to choosing wine? So if you want to have a comment on that, go to our website, ukwineshow.co.uk. The answers to the question, how confident are you when it comes to choosing wine, are totally at ease. I know my way around most wine labels. Most of the time I'm comfortable, but could do with no more. I think I put myself in that category. I get by, although I wish wine was easier to understand. Not at all. I stick to what I know or leave it to someone else to decide. Do go to the ukwineshow.co.uk and have your say. But next up, we have the interview with Tim Howe, CEO of Majestix, on staff training. Hi, I'm here with Tim Howe. He's the CEO of Majestix Wines in the UK. And Tim's going to be talking to us about staff and staff training.
Fine, thank you.
Good to have you back again. Let's start with staff. Majestix has got one of the best reputations for training up staff. In your website, you say that you take on about 150 trainee managers every year. Do you want to just tell us about a typical staff progression?
Yeah, I guess what is pretty unique about us is that, let me just say, first of all, we do take a number of people to drive our vans who aren't part of our trainee manager program, and they're very, very important to us, but they won't necessarily be on quite the same program. Yeah. And indeed, a lot of them are South Africans or indeed Antipodeans.
Australians. You'll find the Kiwis are the managers.
but if they're on a European tour and only have 6 months, then they may well choose to come and drive one of our vans for us.
Definitely. So anyway,
focusing on the trainee managers, in terms of people running the stores, we really only recruit people as a trainee manager. So we're not looking to recruit people who we don't think can move through the business. Mm-hmm. Unlike some people who might, quite reasonably, if you're running a big supermarket, take people on who are only going to actually do a very important job of filling shelves. But join us as a trainee manager, having got a degree in whatever you like, having met some of our staff, having probably been to a graduate recruitment fair, having visited one of our stores, that's absolutely crucial, and demonstrated that you understand not only that we're going to provide a great training environment and a learning experience on wine, but also that you're going to have to work quite hard, that it's going to be physically demanding, and you're going to have to work weekends. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very important for people to understand what we can offer, but also what we need from the people who are going to join us. Join as a training manager.
Just on that, it says on your website you look particularly for graduates. Many says delivery staff are mainly graduates. Why do you look for graduates?
Well, of course, I mean, we're looking for... we're not doctrinal about that point.
Yeah.
But the reality is that an awful lot of talented people are going to university these days. Mm-hmm. And we're looking to recruit people... who need to be above 20. We need to, in order to get insurance on our vans and all the other things that go with making the job work, and also the fact that we're selling alcohol, we clearly can't be recruiting 16-year-olds.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's some practical aspects to it. But really the answer to your question is that because we're building small teams of like-minded people who are going to generate a passion about wine and share that with their colleagues, we find that graduates really enjoy working for us, and we can offer them a really good grounding in a customer service environment combined with learning about wine. And indeed, for those people who go on to do the diploma, which we would expect a number of people would start doing in probably the second year with us, that's a demanding qualification.
Yeah.
And if you're not of graduate standard, you're not going to find it easy to get through that qualification.
Sure.
So that really is perhaps a better answer to your question.
Okay.
So, you know, year one, training manager, year two, assistant manager, year three or four, manager.
Mm-hmm. And you start off on a pay rate of between 16 to £18,500 on your first year.
Yeah.
What do you get to as a manager of a store?
Well, you'll be into the low 20,000s and obviously bonuses. If you're comparing it with becoming an investment banker and money's what worries you, then become an investment banker. If you want to learn about wine and have a customer-focused job, and I would like to feel probably more job enjoyment, than think about Majestix.
Okay, so they join you guys, they do a couple of years of training, both in terms of customer service and also in terms of wine.
Yeah.
They may become managers of a store eventually with a team of, three to four, we're looking for them. How many people get promoted through into head office here?
Well, answer the question the other way, just about everybody in head office, I'm afraid I'm an exception, has worked in the stores.
Yeah.
But the reality is we've got a team of about 60 people, including our regional managers. Some of those will have specific accounting qualifications, so that would cut the potential number down to somewhere between 40 and 50. We've got a total staff establishment of 750, so inevitably it is a fairly tight pyramid.
Yeah.
So whilst we're delighted that we very much can promote our own people, and it's extremely rare, unless there's a very specific skill we don't have that we would recruit outside the business other than as a trainee manager, the reality is that the number of opportunities to be promoted above store manager are going to be fairly limited. We totally recognise that. I think it's great when people move on and get promotions in other parts of the wine industry.
So how many have you got here working in the head office?
Well, in terms of the number of potential vacancies for people with coming out of retail, it would be between 40 and 50.
Okay, it's not too bad though, is it?
Well, it's not, no, but they don't change that frequently, do they? All our buying team, all our marketing team, all of our human resources team all worked in the stores.
Yeah, okay. So all the sort of soft areas, but things like accountancy and lawyers and all that, obviously.
Well, we haven't got any lawyers.
You haven't got any lawyers?
No, we don't want lawyers. And, we employ them outside if we need them.
Yeah.
The accounting functions will either be of an administrative nature that don't necessarily appeal to store staff, or indeed will require an accounting qualification. So.
Okay.
But our IT team all worked in the stores, entirely.
Oh, really?
The entire of our internet team worked in the stores as well.
Okay, that's interesting, isn't it? Why is that? That seems a bit strange to have a...
Well, it might be more difficult now to replace our senior IT people, but they've grown with the business and moved into IT, and I guess we've used... And we don't do our own programming.
Yeah.
So...
They're more project managers.
Yeah, they're more project managers.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. So then...
And, it's a real strength that they're users. They understand what the users require.
No, that makes sense. So you graduate about 150 people. Is your numbers static, or have they been growing?
No, our numbers have been... Well, if we open 10 new stores a year, we need, say, 40 new people, plus other opportunities. We're expanding our sales to businesses quite substantially. And indeed, one of the significant opportunities to be promoted above the level of manager, other than into head office or as to a regional manager, is to a role that we call a business development manager, who are selling into the on-trade.
Okay.
And we've got a team of probably 20 people there now, actually. So
on-trade, so into restaurants?
Yeah.
Okay, I know Majestic sells quite a bit of wine to businesses, for their Friday drinks and all that sort of stuff. And so do you have account managers for them, or are they handled in the stores?
They could be handled in the stores. The bigger part of the growth of our sales to businesses is to restaurants and hotels.
Okay, that's interesting, isn't it? I suppose, is that because your wines aren't really the classical branded wines? You don't have as many branded wines as some of the other multiples, so it's less... Because normally restaurants don't like wines that are available in the high street because it encourages price comparison.
Yeah, that's a slightly old-fashioned view of life, isn't it? That rather assumes consumers are rather more naive than I think perhaps they are. What our wines deliver... I mean, they don't like brands necessarily, but then maybe we don't either very much. What the wines need to deliver is really good value.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what we can offer is really good service.
Yep.
Okay. Because we've got the stores near where the accounts are, and we can frequently deliver on almost a daily basis to an account that doesn't have much storage space.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I suppose you can keep their stock levels down, can't they, which helps their cash flow and all those sort of things. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, that gives people a progression through, so then they start getting into more of that. What did you call that role? The
we're business development manager is
business
the role
development we manager. Okay, how long do people typically stay with Majestic?
4 years.
4 years. So they come through as store manager.
Well, it's a rather dangerous number, that, isn't it? We've got people who've been in the business for 25 years.
Yeah.
The our staff turnover is just over 25%.
A year.
So that means on average people stay with us 4 years. But in reality, that means that people perhaps who can't see the opportunities move, whereas people who have had the opportunities stay.
How many people drop out after the first year?
We'd be looking at about a third.
Okay. That's not too bad, though, because a lot of people probably, they're not really sure what they're doing anyway.
No, I think we've got to recognise, we always think we're the only thought they've had in terms of a career, but in reality, a lot of people haven't probably made their mind up.
Yeah.
And some people who maybe we haven't explained the job accurately enough to, or they haven't thought hard enough about whether they really are going to enjoy working at weekends when maybe some of their graduate friends aren't working at weekends.
Yeah,
there's some real practical issues about retailing there that we can't ignore.
Yeah, for sure. We in my wine tasting business, we do a lot of Saturday work.
Yeah.
And you find that the younger the person, the harder it is for them to be able to handle working the weekends for some reason. You've got another type of role that you take on people for as part of your placement program. What's that?
Well, it's a recognition that, and I think this is both good for some of the universities and colleges, and also their students, but also for us, that we can have a number of students on placement, normally in the third year of a 4-year course, mm-hmm. spending a year out in industry, which they can spend with us. That helps us in terms of building awareness of Majestic in those universities. It helps the students enormously because obviously they get a really live experience, and too frequently I think placement students actually aren't given a real job.
Yeah.
I can assure anyone who's interested in Majestic they will get a real job. They may think they work too hard. but it also does mean if those students choose to return to us that actually that year is the first year of their
training,
so they can well come back to us and very rapidly become an assistant manager.
Oh, excellent.
Indeed, a number of students can actually become an assistant manager during the latter period of their placement, although that would be they'd be moving quite fast to do that. So, yeah, it is just another way, really, of us recruiting and giving something to the colleges in terms of work experience.
And what would you say to, just to wrap up, what would you say to someone who's considering joining Majestic?
I would say make sure you look at exactly how we operate. Make sure you talk to a number of our staff to learn about the job and weigh up whether it's a job that's going to appeal to you. But if you want to learn about wine and if you want to develop a career in the wine industry in the United Kingdom, I can't think of any better place to work.
Well, thanks very much, Tim. We'll wrap it up there. Cheers. I really enjoyed that interview. I think it gives you a really good insight into how Majestic runs as one of the top performing UK wine companies. Majestic's, Oddbins, and to a lesser extent the other high streets, are really the first positions that a lot of people who go into the wine trade start off with. And if you ever thought wine would be your thing, then it's a great idea to think about starting in wine retail. I think that's why the wine trade is such a social group, apart from the product. Many of the people you see in day-to-day life and you deal with in the trade, really, most of them started in retail at some point. And as a result, there's a lot of people's people in the trade. Wine is a great business to be in. Next week, we're talking with wine entertainer Ollie Smith. He was Hardy's wine idol a couple of years ago and is now a BBC wine personality. We talk with Ollie about what he's up to and how he managed to go from an enthusiastic amateur to wine expert in 2 years. So until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.